for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three.
No, it's good.
She got it. Kansas Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Happy Thursday, birds. Welcome into this very first edition of this semester of the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. Thanks for tuning in. The former Red Zone host used to always start these shows by saying, welcome into this edition. And while they always meant a new episode, I mean the same thing, but also a whole new season today with a whole new cast. Guys, how does it feel to be hosting our first episode of the Red Zone?
Feels pretty good. I'm not going to lie. I had one episode last semester as like a trial run, and I'm looking forward to Redbird sports this year and just talking about a lot of what's going on in the national area, too.
David, what about you?
This has been long awaited for me. I've been wanting to get on this podcast for quite some time now. I remember joining WZND as a sophomore, wanting to join this team and not really realizing that, you know, we had a three-man group. And now that we're finally here, I'm ready to get to work.
Absolutely. This is a long time in the making. But you may be wondering, who the heck are these three new guys? We don't blame you. Since we're three totally new voices on this podcast, but we're going to be joining you every Thursday for this semester, so we thought it'd be nice to take some time so you can get to know the two co-hosts here. First, we have a man who spent his summer working at Guaranteed Rate Field. He's taking time out of his day to be here with us instead of researching ways to become a doctor to help out his heavily injured White Sox team. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend David Moses. David?
How's everybody doing? Yes, you know, I'm trying my best to remain loyal and be a good fan for the Chicago White Sox, but they don't make it easy on me. Mikey and Dane here, they heckle me a lot about it, but I'm excited to be here and just ready to get started.
David, I got a quick question for you, maybe a little icebreaker for the listeners. Who was your favorite athlete growing up and why?
Growing up, I've got a few options. I got Smokin' Jay. I got Derrick Rose. I'll probably go with Derrick Rose, though. You know, when I was younger, I wanted to be a basketball player so much, and I tried to emulate how I played to his, you know, minus the injuries and the weak knees. But Derrick Rose, probably, I have to say him.
I don't think there's a guy in Chicago, a guy or girl, I should say, that wasn't such a big fan of Derrick Rose growing up at our age. I mean, he was everything in the city back in the day. And second, we have the one and only Dane Dreyfus, coincidentally the oldest member of our crew. He's not quite as old as his pressured Albert Pujols or the average age of the St. Louis Cardinals players, but he's getting there. Dane, jokes aside, how are you?
I'm doing excellent. You know what? My Redbirds are doing excellent, too. We got Goldie in the hunt for the Triple Crown, which is awesome. We haven't had an MVP since Pujols, so it's just good to see. And honestly, Arenado might finish number two, so yeah. I'm doing pretty well.
Not if Kyle Schwarber has something to say about it.
Oh, yeah, for the Triple Crown?
Yeah.
Because he's really going to come on for that batting title, batting 220 right now.
If Kyle Schwarber somehow finds a way to screw up Paul Goldschmidt's MVP, or Triple Crown, sorry, then that would just be a win for me as a Cubs fan, because Kyle Schwarber is no longer with the Cubs, and that's their fault, but he was a former Cub. He's a World Series Cub. Dane, what's your favorite place to watch a sporting event, and why?
Oh my gosh, this is a deep cut. Favorite place to watch a sporting event is probably with my friends at the local sports bar, Chelios' Pub and Grill, back in Aurora.
Right.
It's a hockey bar.
Yeah.
I grew up a hockey player, and me and my friends actually just watched the World Junior Championships right before we came back to school. So that's easily my favorite place to watch it, just because it's got that hometown hole-in-the-wall feel.
Do you have a team in the World Juniors? Are you a USA guy, or are you Canada? Who do you pull for?
I'm American, so yeah. I'm
a USA guy.
Am I disappointed in their performance this year? Absolutely.
I wasn't able to catch much of the World Juniors. I know you're a big fan, but what ended up happening with USA?
They lost in the quarterfinals to the newly named Czechia, formerly the Czech Republic, which was a huge upset. But then Canada ended up winning 2-1 in OT against Finland, where their captain literally batted a puck off the goal line, saving the game in overtime.
Wow.
To where they would eventually win with a game-winning goal from Kent Johnson.
Wow, maybe I should have caught more of that. That sounds crazy.
It was pretty electric.
And finally, my name is Mikey Frenelli. I'd like to think I'm doing just a little bit better than my favorite team, the Cubs. I'm not quite in shambles yet like they might be, but I didn't lose to the Cardinals today, so I got that going for me, unlike the Cubs. Jokes aside, I'm thrilled to be here tonight and every Thursday hosting the Red Zone. I'd like to give a quick shout-out and thank you to our hosts from last semester and even farther back, Leo, Joey, and Joe. Hope you're all listening if you can take a break from your crazy adult lives. Absolutely crushing it out there right now. But here we are. This is the new Red Zone crew, and we cannot wait to get started. First, I think it would be wrong to start this first show of the year without addressing a tragic loss to the Redbird family that occurred just towards the end of the summer. I think Dan's going to take the lead on this one.
Yeah, Simone Goods was a native of Omaha, Nebraska, and we lost her recently to cancer. She was named the Missouri Valley Conference Newcomer of the Year in 2017 and 18. She was also All-Missouri Valley Conference first team during the 2018-19 season, so she's absolutely left an excellent legacy at Illinois State, and she will be dearly missed, and we send all of our deepest condolences out to her family.
That's a tragic loss to the Redbirds basketball and just Redbirds family. David, do you have anything to say about that as well?
Just kind of piggy-hopping off of what Dane said, condolences to the family, the friends, and just the Redbird community as a whole. You know, a tragic loss, and really praying for that family.
Kristen Gillespie, the Redbird women's basketball head coach, has always been somebody who's very close with their players, has always been a great coach with those players for the last couple of years. I guarantee you when that season gets started in November, there will be a big tribute to Simone and her family, and I'm sure they'll be there in attendance.
I'm sure they'll dedicate this season to her as well.
Absolutely.
So.
And, hey, they had a pretty good season last year. I mean, we can maybe start with that. Looking at Juju Redmond, who was the best player on the Redbirds women's basketball team the last couple years, she's gone pro.
Yeah, I think all of us saw this coming, that she was going to sign somewhere. She had an excellent finish to her season, not only being the leading scorer, but she signed in Spain, where she is going to play for Spar Gran Canaria, which is located in the Canary Islands, which is off the northwest coast of Africa. And she'll compete in the Euro Cup for a team that was 12-18 last season. So let's see if she can have an effect like she did on the Birds this past year.
Yeah, she had that effect that when she was on, she would take over the game. It was her and Mary Crompton. And when they would combine for, you know, their 50, 60 points, they'd always win. And the problem was that that's what it took sometimes to win for them, was getting those players to go in. But that's about all I had for that.
But, you know, the question now is, who needs to step out and fill Redmond's shoes? Ultimately, it's going to be a team effort. You know, losing a player of Juju Redmond's caliber, that's a big piece to that Redbird offense. She averaged 17.8 points per game, which we're talking about earlier. I think me and Dane were talking about that captured some national attention. You know, you're not just going to have one player come in and fill that void. Players need to are going to have to step up. The good thing is this team has a few experienced leaders who I believe will take – who will react well to this bigger role in the team. You know, grad student, like we were talking about, Mary Crompton, who back in 2021 was a MVC Most Improved Player. And then also there's a senior, Deanna Wilson, who did pretty good and was a force at that 4 or 5 position last year. She made all MVC first team, averaging 12.9 points and 7.8 rebounds per game. So it's going to be interesting to see who comes in and really steerheads that, you know, new transition after Juju Redmond's absence.
Yeah, that's I think you pretty much nailed it, Demos. But moving on to some other summer news, do you want to talk about the signature hat that you wear for Nelly with the Tampa Bay Rays and our boy Ryan Cermak getting drafted by him?
So, yeah, I got a couple texts when Ryan Cermak became a Ray, because I wore this one. I don't wear it as much anymore, but I wore this one light blue Tampa Bay Rays cap to class so often last year. I didn't even realize teachers and stuff professors started to think I was like a Rays fan. Like, I had like, I'm a huge Cubs fan, but I had like a professor who came up to me one day after a big lecture and was like, talking to me about the Rays, because, you know, the Rays have been pretty good recently, so they had just done something well, so he was asking me about him, and I was like, you know, I follow them a little bit, but I'm not a huge fan. He's like, you always wear the hat. And I'm like, oh, God, I got to stop wearing that. So I changed to the one Cubs hat I started wearing every day. But anyway, when I saw that was awesome. 71st pick in the 2022 MLB draft, the Rays selected Ryan Cermak. That's one of the highest drafted Redbirds ever, and that's pretty good. He deserves it. He's a legend, and he's been a friend of the pod before, and hopefully we can get him out in the spring.
And, you know, he's just a complete player. His weaknesses are areas for improvement were so small last year that it really helped the Redbirds win more games, whether it was up to bat or playing solid defense. He's just always there to answer the call.
And, you know, as a Redbird fan and just watching Cermak go to a team, I couldn't be more stoked to see him go to a farm system like the Rays, where they produce talent like Wander Franco and Shane McClanahan. And, you know, what's funny is, like, a player that I think he could very well turn into in the MLB would be a former Tampa Bay Ray and Brett Phillips, where he was this all-around defensive stud and as well could bring it with the bat occasionally. I mean, Ryan Cermak was a gold glover in college, so I think it's not crazy to see that being what he translates to in the MLB.
I see a lot of Brett Phillips in him, too. I remember when he came on the show in the spring, he talked about how his MLB comparison, he thought, or his guy he looked up to and emulated his game after, was Kike Hernandez, the former Red Sox Dodger, et cetera. That's another comparison. I didn't think about that. I didn't think that's who he's going to say, because he's a very Chris Bryant-type swing. He's, you know, quick to the ball, and he's getting good power out of it. But I didn't even think about Kike Hernandez, but that's a good comparison. And it's crazy to know that that's who he thinks he's going to model his game after.
And Ryan Cermak played all over the field, and that's what Kike Hernandez brings to the table. He's a utility guy. And Ryan Cermak, too, I'm pretty sure he even threw like 90 on the mound,
yeah,
too. So this guy can play in the infield. He can play in the outfield. Just maybe not going to be your flashiest player, your superstar player. Obviously, in college, it's a little bit of a different game.
Mm-hmm.
But in the MLB, he can translate to being that key utility player that good teams are going to need. And he went to a team that's competitive now and hopefully will be competitive by the time that he comes up and is ready to play.
Yes, Holm didn't really have him pitch as much last year, but the year before that, he was pitching a lot for the Redbirds because, kind of like you said, Dane, in college, it's just, you know, there's guys who are literally above everyone else, and they could play every position. Once you get in the pros, you kind of have to find your niche. But
so what do you think he's going to benefit from more, you know, in the big leagues?
I think he'll probably benefit just learning from great players like Randy Arozarena, Wander Franco, like I said before. And you know what? They're a pretty well-managed team, aside from, like, the Blake Snell issues in the playoffs. We won't get into that. But
honestly, the World Series, more than likely, in
literally
2020. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, just a good farm system. And I think, honestly, like, top five in the league, not currently with what they have, but also they've called up a lot of their prospects recently. So maybe the ETA to the show might not be that far off for Ryan Cermak. But speaking of which, moving on to the show, I mean, Ryan Pedon has got us looking forward to this basketball season. He stayed pretty busy this summer, adding shooting guard Seneca Knight from BYU, who once upon a time averaged 17 points at San Jose State University. And the Birds also added redshirt junior Joe Petrakis from Western Carolina, who averaged 8 points and 3 rebounds a game. And this happened right at the beginning of the summer, so of course our previous crew couldn't cover it. But honestly, we've been texting them all summer, and they are stoked for this season.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting season. It's a complete overhaul of the roster for the most part, aside from a couple key names, Liam McChesney, Ryan Schmidt, etc. And as you said, Dan, he brought in a couple of big recruits, and I'm interested to see how Coach Pedon continues to bring in recruits, obviously having those Ohio State ties from back in the day. I'm interested to see, even past this year, what he does to try and revamp this program and its recruiting style.
These guys are young, and I think that they're hungry. They've had a few years where they've, you know, had a little bit of a underwhelming performance, but I think that they're going to come out and shock a lot of people.
Yeah, and I'm also really excited to watch Antonio Reeves play at Kentucky. As sad as it was to see him transfer, he goes to a Power 5 school in the SEC, an absolute powerhouse of a college basketball team, getting coached by John Calipari. And he was an absolute stud. I hope that he goes far at the big dance this year, but I hope we see him there too. Wouldn't that be a Cinderella story if we
awesome.
Got in, won the Missouri Valley, and somehow like played Kentucky as like a 15 seed? That would be unreal.
That'd be wild, and it would be the first time for the Redbirds to go to March Madness since 1998, since Dan Mueller was a player. So Dan Mueller has tried his hand at coaching for a decade, did not end up working out. Great guy, by the way, Dan Mueller, but just did not working out coaching, and it'd be interesting to see how long it takes Coach Pedon, if ever, to get the Redbirds back to the big dance.
You know what? I think I just want to see him back in the big dance just to see his kids' reaction, because he is a great follow on Twitter.
We got to get Maddox on the show sometime. He does his own little show with the Redbirds. I'd love to talk to him.
Well, is he a competitor then?
Maybe
bring him on?
Maybe the Maddox Minute might be competition. I don't know, but I love his show. It's funny. If you haven't seen it, look at the Redbird Basketball Instagram. Coach Pedon's son Maddox will host little 1-2 minute podcast with interviewing different players on the team, especially some of these transfers. And it is interesting because he asks some kind of fun, goofy questions.
Yeah, that's excellent. Excellent.
So moving on, we're going to take a quick little break. And when we come back, we're going to have a lot of talk about the sport in session right now, which is Redbird volleyball. They have their first official game tomorrow night. And we have some audio we're going to share from last week's scrimmage. We'll be right back here on the Red Zone.
Hey, this is Katie Weimerskirch, and you're listening to The Red Zone.
Welcome back into The Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. That bump was brought to you by Katie Weimerskirch, 2021 MVC Libero of the Year, and she's sticking around for the Redbird team this year, which is not something that all of the superstars last year did. A couple big transfers as the team lost Coach Leah Johnson and now brings in head coach Allie Matters. What do you guys think about the team going into the season, first and foremost?
Well, I'm just looking forward to seeing what Allie Matters does as a coach, because she was excellent at Wright State, just has great pedigree and just a great resume to bring to the table. And, I mean, you know what? Props, no problem with the girls that transferred to Michigan State, because they're a great program and they're up and coming as well. But you know what? The girls that stuck around, they really believe in her. So I'm really excited to see what they can put together, especially with veteran players like Sarah Kushner.
You know, with a new system and new leadership, you kind of compare it back to, and I know we're going to get to this later on in the show, you compare it to the Chicago Bears situation. A new front office, new coaches, new regime comes in, and you kind of get this sense of it's a breath of fresh air for the team. Obviously, our volleyball team has had immense success over the last few years under, you know, Leah Johnson. But let's just be frank. They were never really able to capitalize and win it all, really. So the morale is high, it seems like, and hopefully that'll translate to in-game performances.
Absolutely, and you could tell it hurt Leah a little bit. I mean, being involved in both of those last 2 years, the press conferences after the loss to Oklahoma State and then Michigan State, or sorry, Purdue, the last two years, thank you, having her see that, or hearing her say, you know, how much it hurts to come back to the tournament and then lose, and last year losing three sets, the year before losing four sets out of five. It's just, you could see how much it pained her, so I understood why she left for Michigan State. It was a little bit fuzzy when she did re-sign, but then all of a sudden there was a new deal.
It was shocking, in my opinion.
It was pretty shocking. Looking back, I should have known that maybe there was something more coming, because she signed the contract and then maybe thought if there was a bigger, better offer, they could buy her out, and I think that's what Michigan State did. Michigan State's head coach before Leah had been there for like 30-plus years, had been to the Final Four a couple times, so she's walking in a big shadow, but I think she'll have lots of success in Michigan State, too.
Yeah, these girls really believe in her, and honestly, I just was wondering your general reaction, being so close with the team, covering the team all last year. Is there any players that you are looking to step up for this season?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to get to some quotes in a little bit, but Sarah Kushner has been an all-star for this team for years, but she was always kind of like the young gun all-star. Like, she wasn't the senior leader because she wasn't a senior. First, she was a freshman, sophomore, junior, obviously, in that order. And, yeah, as always.
Yes,
and,
that's how college does it.
Well, order, not always with college athletics, though. Sometimes they do, like, the red shirt and then the COVID year and the grad student and all this stuff. But she has done a true four-year plan, from what I remember. So, at this point, if this is it for her, which she sounded like it was in the press conference last week, she is looking at an entirely new system. And that is something that's probably scary to some people, but she seemed like she was excited for it.
Okay, yeah, that's...
So that cues us right into the quote I have about her. So I basically cued that in. I had something written down to cue that in, but I basically did it on my own. But basically, Kushner was saying how she adjusted to Allie Matters and a completely revamped coaching staff, because when Leah left, she took her entire assistant coaching staff and manager staff with her. So when Allie came in, they had to rehire a bunch of different people. So this is Sarah Kushner talking about how it might be a blessing in disguise.
They're bringing a lot of, like, new ideas, a lot of new drills to the gym that are, like, make me feel like I'm a freshman, you know, because your senior year, like, you're kind of comfortable with the program and stuff, but, like, everyone's basically a freshman. I feel like it's helping me learn a lot of different things that I maybe necessarily wouldn't have picked up on if they didn't come in, so I'm appreciating that, and also just, like, their energy and competitive spirit.
So I found that interesting that she went out to say that maybe it's a blessing in disguise, maybe it is kind of something they needed, maybe... I mean, they have been to the tournament four straight years, but they haven't gotten a win, as I said. So maybe some fresh eyes are exactly what they need to say. This is what we need to take the next step.
Right. And I mean, if you're not finding success, it's not bad to get a new voice into the locker room. Because, I mean, let's be honest. It wasn't really that close with Purdue. They dominated.
Not at all.
They dominated. And honestly, too, you see it in sports all the time. I mean, in hockey, Paul Maurice literally was the coach of a pretty good Winnipeg Jets team. And he stepped away himself and was like, the guys need a new voice. Obviously, the situation's a little different, where she went to a different opportunity. But you know what? I don't think a new voice is necessarily a bad thing.
No.
And I think that's throughout Redbird Sports, is obviously with Coach Pete on, too. It's like, you know what? It's almost like a culture change, too. It's this new wave coming in, and it just seems that everything kind of got stagnant in Redbird Nation. You know what? It's new voices. It's new talent. And I'm excited for this season.
But, you know, with this new talent, I still think that they have the foundation. The pedigree is still there. It's just all about winning those key games, getting over the hump of when it's late into the year and it's crunch time, you need to win those crucial games to win it all. How are you going to respond? What are you going to do to get those necessary wins? And that's pretty much all it is.
So the two big players that were lost last year were probably the two best, if not in the top three or four. It would have been Tamara Otenay, who was the MVP of the MVC last year, like openly won the award, and then Aaliyah Moore, who was named Freshman of the Year. So they both were stars. And Aaliyah Moore followed Leah to Michigan State. And I know a couple others in the team did an official visit to Michigan State but ended up deciding to stay at ISU. Aaliyah decided to go to Michigan State. and Tam decided to go to Georgia Tech, where they're both, I'm sure, going to get plenty of success and follow all the way into the tournament, maybe make a nice run for it. But it's interesting that players like Katie Weimerskirch and Sarah Kushner, even after great individual years, decided to stick around. In fact, Katie Weimerskirch, coming off Libero of the Year, is still thinking that there's more to her game coming up this season. Here's what she said.
I think obviously just like continue to where I left off last year, continue trying to be the best defender in the league, the best passer in the league, and then as well as being like a good leader for my team. I think that's going to be very important this year since we are kind of a newer team.
That was after the red and white scrimmage last Friday. Sarah and Katie were on the same team, and their team, the red team, actually swept the scrimmage against the white team that was headed by Caitlin Prozinski, who was their best player. So that was an interesting scrimmage to watch. Seeing those two together on the court was exciting just because it's going to be a big show seeing them together every day starting and how impressive they could be.
You know, and it's going to be interesting where they find a way to get these kills. I mean, you're losing your in Tamara Otene, who was first in kills with 494, and you lost also Leah Moore, who had 251. So you've got to replace that. And then next up is Sarah Kushner. So I'm wondering if we could see a performance from Sarah Kushner this year where she takes some of those statistics and just by someone has to do it. Like, she just increases hers and ends up being like an all-MVC player.
She absolutely needs to. I don't know if she can carry the 400 because she does a lot more all around than maybe just a straight-up attack. But if she can carry her own with maybe 2-3, you can maybe spread the other 100 back out to even out to a couple other notable players, maybe Caitlin Prozinski, Nicole Lund, a couple of other really solid role players in this Redbird team.
You know, you talk about the players, but let's give some credit to the coach, Allie Matters. You know, coming from Wright State University in four seasons at the helm of the Raiders volleyball program, Matters compiled an impressive 70-30 overall record and a 48-15 record in conference play, leading WSU from the bottom of the Horizon League to the consecutive NCAA tournament appearances in 2019 and 2021.
Yeah, I mean, she's got big shoes to fill, but she obviously has the pedigree to do it with a team that went 13-5 in conference in the Redbirds. I think she can very easily repeat that success. But you know what? Even though the Birds lost to Purdue last year, Wisconsin ended up winning it all. And I think that leads in a perfect time to just talk about how Wisconsin is playing ISU in football. We can do a little teaser on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I do want to share, not to destroy your segue, Dan, because that was solid, but I do want to share one clip of Allie Matters. We're going to let it play, and then we'll talk all about Wisconsin. But I do have a 30-second clip about Allie, and it's funny that David said that because it cues exactly into what he was talking about with her inheriting this roster.
Just trying to be as solid as we can across the board. So we're only going to be as good as our weakest link. So I think bridging that gap between our best and our first 1, 2, 3 people off the bench has been our biggest challenge. So I think that identity is, of course, Sarah Kushner, she's a standout. She always will be. But we need to be prepared. Heaven forbid something, Sarah Kushner gets a bloody nose or gets a, whatever it may be, we have to be prepared to fill in for. So I think just giving everyone reassurance that everyone can put balls away and contribute is going to be our biggest challenge.
And so it's interesting that Ellie says that because maybe that assumes that she wants to see some young new talent do well, which I'm going to segue off Dane's segue and say that's going to be the key for ISU football this year as well.
A segue off a segue. I absolutely love that.
That's elite.
But I'm actually a Wisconsin Badger fan. They're my number one team besides the Birds. But I'm rooting for the Birds. I'm going to the game. I'm rooting for the Birds. But am I concerned? Absolutely. Do I like Wisconsin by 50? I'm not a gambling man, but maybe.
Oh, come on.
I mean, as long as we stack the box against Braylon Allen, I think that's the only way we're going to find success.
Yeah.
Until Graham Mertz shows that he is like a quarterback that Wisconsin expected him to be,
mm-hmm.
Birds by 5.
So it's funny that Zach Anikstad left the Big Ten and now is coming to ISU to quarterback, and his first game is back in a Big Ten stadium. Interesting.
And he beat Wisconsin in his tenure with Minnesota.
Yeah.
So if there's a guy that knows what it takes, it's him.
And I think that's going to be the key for them. He went to IMG Academy in high school. Obviously, you don't go there if you're not good at sports. He went to Minnesota, transferred to ISU, and now under Brock's back leadership, I feel like there's a chance he could be semi-decent. I'm not saying we're going to beat Wisconsin, but there's a chance in the few weeks after that, maybe we can show some positive record.
All I'm really going to say is this is going to be a great challenge for a young Illinois State Redbirds team going against a Big Ten team like this. Is going to be challenging being on the road. The atmosphere is going to be rumbling. You know, the fans are going to be there. The tailgating is going to happen. It's going to be hard to keep your mind set on football, but that's going to be a really big challenge for the Redbirds. And I don't know. Hopefully we'll shock some people and maybe pull out an upset, but I'm with Dane on this one. I don't know about this.
See, but it's a huge building block game, though, too, because you're going as the underdog. There's low expectations. No one's debating that. I mean, Wisconsin is perennially a top 15 team in the nation, running back university, offensive lineman university, and then they always have that Big Ten defense. But you know what? Say you go in and you score the first touchdown, build on the small things, build mm-hmm. on that. Also, too, say you lose the game by, like, hey, you know what they say? Good teams win, great teams cover. If Illinois State covers the spread, I think you can build on that genuinely as something positive going into the season.
Yeah, not even like they look at specifically the betting odds, but just even if they can keep it close, which is obviously that would mean covering, if they can keep it close, that's a win for them. I completely agree.
It's going to be a learning experience regardless of a win or a loss. I think me and Mikey were saying, I think they play Valpo the next week.
Yeah.
When you're going from playing Wisconsin and then no knock to Valpo, but playing Valpo the next week, you kind of have that sense. It's a little bit of an edge, you know, especially if you stay in the game with Wisconsin. You're coming into the next game saying, we got this. We can do this. This is something that we can manage. We managed to stick with Wisconsin. We can definitely do it with Valpo.
Stick with it. I hope we would be able to stick it to Valpo at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. Those first two games are not going to be a great indicator of what the Redbird football team looks like in 2022 because, as Dane said, especially after hopefully keeping it close against a Big Ten opponent, we should make pretty light work of Valparaiso, knock on wood. But then we're at home for two more weeks after that. So at home for three straight weeks after Wisconsin, you got Eastern and Southern Illinois before getting back on the road at Northern Iowa, who we upset last year, South Dakota for homecoming back at home, on the road, Indiana State and North Dakota State, Youngstown State at home, South Dakota State on the road, and finally, Western Illinois at home. A lot of MVFC games, obviously, but not a terrible schedule for the Redbirds this year.
No, leading it off with it's going to be their hardest game of the year. There's no question about it. And then against a team that started very slow, too. I went to the opening game against Penn State last year. Wisconsin did not start strong.
No.
So if you can catch this team off guard, catch them sleeping, and I'll tell you what, the Wisconsin fan section always shows up late.
Yeah.
So if they come to a 14-0 ball game, who knows? You got any given Sunday, more like any given Saturday. Let's get it.
So you were there for the Penn State game week one last year.
Mm-hmm.
So you think you said they started slow. I don't exactly remember the game, but they started slow, you're saying.
Here's the thing, though, is that Braylon Allen hadn't came onto the scene yet. They were running with a running back transfer from Clemson. In Wisconsin, they always, like, you always get hyped with the new QB and that they're going to be a throwing offense. Their bread and butter is running the ball.
Right.
And they probably have the best running back in the nation. So if you shut him down, that's how you're going to beat this team.
So I wonder if they were slow out of the gate against another Big Ten opponent, if there's a chance they might not take it as seriously against Illinois State and come out even slower. There's always the chance.
But, you know, Dane said it best. This is the perfect time to play them. I don't think Wisconsin, you know, any team, you know, coming into the first game, you don't have your legs completely under you. You haven't really felt that physical contact versus another team. You've been playing against your teammates for the whole offseason, you know, training camp. So this is the perfect time to play them. And like you said, this is probably their hardest opponent. So it's going to be much needed experience.
You wonder if that's why they're having an FCS team come visit week one to make sure it's a good warm-up game, considering they had a tough time against an in-conference opponent week one last year.
That's absolutely what they're doing. I think there's no question about it, especially when you go off with a team like Penn State, who it's not like you're playing like Northwestern hasn't been bad in a couple, but like your U of I's of the world, like,
yeah,
being like, yeah, like you're playing Penn State, so next year you're going to follow up with a team that's notoriously in a weaker conference than just the FCS. But overall, like, they still have to play the football game.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a whole game to play, and shameless plug maybe, but ZND will be live broadcasting that game. It'll be myself and David and Blake Borgart at the game calling that live. So, David, I'm looking forward to that next weekend. We'll talk more about it next week's show, but what about you?
I'm stoked. I'm losing sleep over it. You know, preparation started when I found out I was going to be on the call, so we're definitely going to have some fun.
That'll be a good one. I just hope that when they do jump around there at Camp Randall, you guys can still hear us on air, because that gets pretty loud.
Will I run on the field? And I'm going as a fan. I'm not affiliated with WZND. More like just Dane just being Dane.
Yeah,
so
Dane's at the game as a fan.
Yes.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, that was our Redbird recap. We're going to transition into the world of national sports, starting with the baseball diamond. And as I talked about in the intro, we do not have a shared fandom here, so that might get a little interesting. We'll be right back here on 103.3 WZND.
Hi, this is Paul DeYoung, former ISU Redbird, current St. Louis Cardinal. You're listening to Red Zone on WZND.
That was ISU's very own Redbird turned Memphis Redbird turned St. Louis Cardinal, Paul DeYoung, infielder for the St. Louis Cardinals. Dane, St. Louis Cardinals, I should say. Dane, where do you stand on Paul DeYoung this season? It's been up and down.
You know what? You said he went from being a Redbird to a Memphis Cardinal to a St. Louis Cardinal. And you know what? He went back to a Memphis and then back up to St. Louis. And you know what? He's been hotter than a stolen car since.
Wasn't he a AAA All-Star this year or something like that? Or he was doing really well in AAA and then he got called back up. And it was the break he needed.
I don't know what's going on, but there's something in the water in our farm system. Like, the St. Louis Cardinals have one of the best farm systems in baseball and is a top six team at the moment in baseball. And it was actually announced by someone on The Athletic that Jordan Walker is the number one prospect in baseball, in his opinion. He's been consistently like top 10, possibly top 5 based on like MLB.com and Baseball Americana. But overall, the Cardinals' future is looking good, and I am just drinking up this misery that you guys are having with the Cubs and White Sox.
So before we get to the Cubs and Sox, we'll keep on the Cardinals. 72-53 today, following a big win against a team I'm not going to say just coincidentally, but a big win, 8-3 at Wrigley Field. Thank you, David. And they are 6 games above the Brewers, comfortably in the lead in the NL Central. The Brewers have kind of thrown in the towel. The Cubs, Reds, and Pirates are not really ever an issue this season so far. Is it boom or bust for the Cardinals this year? What do you want from them? Where would you be happy?
You know what? With the NL being as stacked as it is, like, I'm kind of having low expectations, especially with the playoff format, because they do have an old rotation. But credit has to go to Mozeliak for the pickups. Like, you got Jordan Montgomery, who's been the best pitcher in the MLB for the past 2 weeks. He's 4-0 with a .35 ERA. I'm not saying that as being a homer. He literally has
done well. And I think leaving a Yankees team that was really good before that too, and coming, some of those Yankees trades have kind of affected them. Joey Gallo and Jordan Montgomery, the Yankees have not been as good.
Absolutely miserable. And you know what? It's just the Cardinals always catch fire around this time of the year, but I'm also just enjoying watching them play. Like, they're getting good production from their depth guys like Lars Nootbaar, Brendan Donovan, Albert Pujols. But you know what's really coming in is clutch in their bread and butter is just Arenado and Goldschmidt being Arenado and Goldschmidt. Like, it feels like every day you're seeing a just defensive highlight that just seems impossible by Arenado. Like, I'm so happy just to have him as a Cardinal. But you know what? The NL is so stacked in the Braves. I just don't know their farm system too, with Michael Harris now and Vaughn Grissom has been batting like .438. So the NL stacked this year. So I'm hoping for at least an NLCS appearance, but if they don't, I'm not going to be disappointed because they do need another arm.
David, what do you think for the Cardinals this year?
Cardinals, I'm not really too focused on. I'm going to be honest. I'm putting all my energy towards my Sox team that I've been watching. Like you said, I worked at Guaranteed Rate Field this year, and it's been a struggle. It's been an emotional roller coaster, I'll say that.
So we talk about how spread out the NL Central is. That is not the case, at least in the top three for the AL Central. Cleveland currently leading at 66-57. Twins just behind at 62-60, 3.5 games back, and also 3.5 games back is the Chicago White Sox, 63-61. I don't think this is where anyone thought the White Sox would be come September.
They were supposed to be great, but they're merely good. We had so many expectations for this team for the second year in a row, and now we're left reaching for explanation. This is a squad that after 93 wins in 2021 sits at second place tie in a mediocre American League Central it dominated last year. A 63-61 record is not good enough to sniff a wild card berth in a generous new platform, new format for the playoffs. It's a club that's seen two all-star starting pitchers in Lucas Giolito and Lance Lynn fall into high ERA sinkholes that jeopardize the club's chance at continuity. We are not in a good space. We Southsiders just can't catch a break. Injuries whittle this team so easily. It's like our depth pieces never equate to what we lost, and it's tough as a Southsider.
I'm gonna say, and the White Sox are my second favorite team, but I'll tell you what, I think this is the most White Soxy season ever because you have the second best pitcher in the AL and Dylan Cease, who didn't even get an All-Star nod, and you've got a lineup just loaded with talent, and your most consistent player has been Andrew Vaughn. When you have a team that has a roster with Luis Robert, Eloy Jimenez, who just got hurt by sneezing from what I've heard. It's just unbelievable to watch. Like, you just expect so much from this team. And then having Tony La Russa as your your manager is
Sleepy
just
Tony.
It just doesn't help. Like, I feel so bad because I just, like, the only thing I like watching more than the Cardinals win is the White Sox win, because it makes Cubs fans that much more miserable.
Well, when you think about it, One of the White Sox main weaknesses that's pretty apparent in my eyes is that once their starting pitcher comes out, they don't really have the best production beyond that point. Whether it's Lance Lynn, Lucas Giolito, they can't capitalize once that relief pitcher or closeout pitcher comes in. It's pretty discouraging to see.
The White Sox, man, and I'm glad you guys brought up Tony La Russa, so I didn't have to. And you guys are the ones who are considered the White Sox fans, and I didn't want to be the guy to bring it up. But, like, I've seen a shift. Because at this time, like, last year or even, like, a couple months, like, a year and a half ago, everyone who wasn't a White Sox fan was like, what are you doing? Like, why are you signing Tony La Russa? Like, even the Cardinals fans, I feel like, were like, come on. But now it's kind of gotten to the point where the White Sox are like, hey, only we can make fun of him, but also, yeah, like, you kind of have to. It's just gotten rough.
I mean, at the end of his Cardinals tenure, which was, like, around, like, 2013, that's when I was like, this guy is so long in the tooth, like, he's got to hang it up. And then it's 2020, there's a pandemic, and Tony La Russa is coming back to manage the Chicago White Sox.
I don't know what's harder to believe, if you told me in 2019, the pandemic, or Tony La Russa coming back to baseball.
I mean, I guess... rest in peace, but Tommy Lasorda possibly going back to the Los Angeles Dodgers, I thought would have been more likely.
Literally. Yeah, it's insane.
But, you know, I said it as a joke with the sleepy Tony thing, but it seems like that's radiating throughout the team. Watching the games live in person, it didn't really seem like they just had that much energy. They didn't play with that extra oomph that you need to succeed at the big league. So I hope that they can turn it around and make for a playoff push, but, you know, with the injury to Tim Anderson, one of their, you know, leaders on the team, it's going to be tough. It's going to be a long road.
One of the biggest things in sports, too, that I think it's a lack of accountability from the fans' perspective is the training staff. What has it been, 3 or 4 years with the Chicago White Sox? They've cleaned house. They've gotten a whole new staff with Tony La Russa being the headliner, like, whoop-de-doo. But the injuries just haven't stopped. And I know it's baseball. I know it's a long season. But it's like, at some point, it's like, what are you doing? You got to have these guys prepared physically for the season, and it just seems like they keep getting these major injuries that are just preventing them from even getting close to their potential.
That, and even when they're healthy, it seems like they just have that sloppy play. I mean, I was at my first ever White Sox game was this summer, and this is a play that you guys probably both remember because it was just so notable. There was a triple play to end the inning that the White Sox against the Twins, it was a big game against the Twins, they ended up losing, and the Sox had gotten a couple runs in the inning. And they had a chance for more with the bases, I think, first and second. And they just hit into a literal triple play because one of the runners literally forgot to tag up. And it ended the inning. Went from a zero-out rally to end of the inning.
White Sox.
Yeah, no one in the stadium could believe it. And then about 2 seconds later, the Liam Hendricks opening started, which is pretty cool. So that's probably why everyone forgot about it. But, yeah, that was bad. And watching that in person, just not a White Sox fan, obviously, but I was there just trying to enjoy it and, like, that was crazy. I mean, I did enjoy it. I should say that, but just trying to, like, you know, not be biased about it. That was crazy.
See, but you know what? It is the Chicago White Sox, and there is one worse thing for Chicago baseball, and that's if you're a Cubs fan.
Yeah. All right, good segue. Dane and I are battling with the segues right now. But anyway, no, the Cubs, I don't even know where to start. I don't think the Cubs are going to be a hot topic this fall on this show, as much as I love them, because there's really nothing more to say. I don't know where you go at this point if you're the Cubs. You're maybe hoping for good individual performances, but at the end of the day, unless it's some of the younger guys, it doesn't truly matter except for trade value. The Cubs are going to take a couple years to get back to any notability.
You know, and I love when it's competitive, and, like, I feel like aside from the couple World Series years that the Cubs were really contenders is the only couple years where the Cubs and Cardinals were the top dogs in the NL Central. But overall, it's like, what are you doing? You have Ian Happ and Wilson Contreras, and you're like, oh, well, we'll probably re-sign them. Why would you re-sign them? You are completely irrelevant. You are going to be irrelevant for long-term. Like, there's so many better teams in the NL. You don't have any pitching. Your farm system is pretty solid. Like, it's on the up-and-up, getting Pete Crow Armstrong in the Javier Baez deal was a nice deal. You got nothing for Chris Bryant. So why are you going to stop getting nothing at Wilson Contreras and Ian Happ when they both have value? Like, get a bag of chips. Just fill the farm system. At some point, it's got to be quantity over quality before you could be good. And, I mean, like, you're signing guys like Seiya Suzuki and Marcus Stroman. It's like, okay. Yeah. I'm getting frustrated as a Cardinal fan. That's how you know it's bad.
I understand the not trading Wilson only because it didn't seem like the value was as high. Like, the only reason we fleeced the Mets for Pete Carr Armstrong, which I love that deal, was because they somehow desperately thought their piece away from winning the World Series was Javi Baez, which I don't understand. But they thought that, so they were desperate enough and gave us their top two or three prospect who had dealt with injury, and now he's tearing it up.
when you think about it, you ask, where do they go from here? It's such a cloudy future for the Cubs. And really, my opinion, I think you start to test out some of these young guys that's in the minor leagues. I got a name for you who is a family friend. I'm not going to be biased, but Ed Howard.
Yeah.
He plays with them, and he's made a couple of plays. I think he has dealt with a little bit of injuries, but start to test out some of these young guys. You might just hit something.
I'm a big Brennan Davis fan, too.
Oh, yeah.
The prospect they have, and he wasn't kind of a big name coming out, and he's just balled out. He's got the power. He's got the speed. So he could be a superstar for the Cubs in the future, but also, too, in regards to, like, I contribute the catcher position in baseball kind of like the goalie position in hockey, where there's no really pure trade value. It's kind of just the going market. For instance, like, there, I would say the catcher position is probably the weakest position overall talent-wise in the MLB right now, but there's a lot of young talent coming up through the pipeline.
Yes.
You've obviously got Adley Rutschman, Shea Langeliers, but then also, too, your top two prospects in the MLB right now are Francisco Alvarez for the Mets, who I believe is kind of probably the reason that they didn't, because they were big buyers on Wilson Contreras.
That's exactly why I think the Mets didn't go, because they knew that they thought they were going to try something out with Alvarez. And
I always get them confused, because I know the Blue Jays also have a catcher that's a really highly touted prospect, and it's so funny, because it was like, man, these catchers, man, that like there's none really coming up, and then out of nowhere it's like, bang, there's 10 catchers in the top 100 prospects in the MLB pipeline.
So Mikey, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
I know that David Ross is loved throughout the north side of Chicago, you know, obviously with the things that he's done, winning the World Series with the Cubs, I think back in 2015, was that?
2016, yeah.
Yep.
He was with them in 2015 and 16. He came on as like the player to be named later in the John Lester deal.
Yeah. So
because he was Lester's guy.
Anyway. How big of a leash, or how long of a leash do you think he has to still work with the Chicago Cubs organization?
That's a good question. I think it's got to be through this little like rebuild. He has struck me as the kind of guy who at first I wasn't super confident about. Of course, I was excited, but I wasn't confident because I'm like, how is he going to manage a team of his friends? But now that the whole team is a bunch of guys who he didn't play with, aside from Wilson Contreras, Jason Hayward, who's gone out for this year, and Kyle Hendricks and a couple others, it's going to be interesting to see how he is as a coach, because he doesn't seem like he messes around that much as a coach. He's a pretty serious, kind of mad guy most of the time when I see him coaching.
Well, I would say he's a little bit immature as a coach, personally, but I feel like it was mainly a clubhouse hire. It's like, okay, because you know this team and these guys are your friends, you'll be able to continue the success. They're gone. And I almost feel like how long of a leash does David Ross have is the wrong question. I honestly think it's when he decides, obviously management can decide to go a different way, but I don't see David Ross wanting to stick around. And it's not like he was just absolutely bent on being an MLB manager. It's almost kind of like the situation with Yadier Molina, where he'll probably be a bench coach somewhere. But I almost feel like the David Ross experiment might be coming to an end, and it might be on his own terms, because I don't know how much interest he has in going through a long-term rebuild. And, I mean, he's a young guy. Like, he still has a family, and it's like, if your friends are gone, why do you still want to do it?
Well, he has to coach long enough to consider if he wants to get another coaching job again. Either that, or he goes back to ESPN or Dancing with the Stars, one of the above. But like, he'll have to do one or the other. And I would think, after, obviously, his Dancing with the Stars window is over. One, he competed already, and two, that was when he was at the top of his popularity. And three, if he goes back to ESPN, he's not their number one or two crew. He's, you know, he was fine as an announcer, but I think he should stay in baseball as a coach. It's a matter of if he coaches long enough with the Cubs and shows enough promise where, post Cubs, another team goes, hey, let's give a shot to David Ross.
I don't think he's done nearly enough to land or secure landing a job post the, you know, Chicago Cubs. So it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, how long he's, you know, with the team.
We could talk baseball all day, but we have touched on all three of our teams, and now we're going to give it to a quick break. When we get back, we're going to talk about the highly anticipated biggest thing in pro sports right now. That is the upcoming NFL. We'll be right back. Actually, we're going to keep it right here and talk about the NFL now. With the Bears coming up on this season, what do you guys think about Matt Eberflus and the whole new system the Bears have set up?
I like him. I like the principles and what he's brought to the team. I'm not sure if we are going to see the benefits to his labor just yet. I know that it's a working progress. Process. And, you know, one of the things that general manager Ryan Poles always says is this is not a rebuild. But, you know, when in fact it you tore apart your one of the best defenses in the league for the past 2-3 years, and then you didn't provide any help to an offense that is at the bottom tier of the league. So I'm kind of on the side of saying it's going to be a long road for the Bears to get back to that prominent level that we were back in 2018, 1985. It's going to be a little bit of a road.
Trigger warning, I am a Packer fan, but I believe the line is set at 5.5 or 6.5 for the Bears' win total this year. I'm hammering the under. I think they're going to be in contention for the first overall pick, mainly because the bottom of the league, I don't think there's like a 1 or 2 win team this year. I think all of the bad teams improved and the mediocre teams all got a little bit worse. So I could see the Bears having the first overall pick with like a 4 and 13 record, but it's the worst roster on paper. They didn't add really any talent except defensive backs, which is great and all, but that's not immediate impact in my opinion. And then you also lost Khalil Mack, which Bears fans are like, oh, he's been hurt the past couple of years. He's still a top 10 pass rusher in the game.
When people say that, I always kind of bat my eyes because before he got injured last year, he was having a really good year. And it's not the way that he wanted to leave Chicago. I'm pretty sure that after that 2018 season, he wanted to be with us for the rest of his career. But he wasn't doing that bad. When you're a fan, Chicago Bears fan like I am, and you watch every single game, every single interview, as much practice as you can see that Khalil Mack was not that bad.
And then I couldn't agree with you more. And then also, too, your only targets are Darnell Mooney and Cole Kmet, which are still – I'm a fan of them both as a Packer fan. They're both still young. Your number two target is like – Byron Pringle, or not your number three guy in the depth chart,
probably would have been N'Keal Harry, but that's out for the season now. But yeah, Byron Pringle, I'm assuming now.
You still have one of the worst O-lines in the league, and Tevin Jenkins, that whole saga has just been miserable for them. I just don't see where these Bears fans are being like, I mean Adam Rank, I believe from NFL Network, was like, we're a 9-8 team and we get into the final wild card spot, and I'm like, are we watching the same sport and looking at the same roster?
I mean, going back to the Khalil Mack thing really fast, I think the whole thing with Khalil Mack was just like, especially after those years where he was just so good with the Raiders and then his first 2 years with the Bears, if you watch, and I'm sure Dave would agree with this, if you watch, every play he's getting double teamed or flagged. Every single play. And the refs don't usually call it unless it's obvious because they just assume it's going to happen to Khalil Mack. Same thing happens to Aaron Donald.
Another great point with Aaron Donald, too, is we have to talk about what happened today in the controlled scrimmage. Was it, I believe, with the Washington Commanders?
No, it was the Bengals. They got to stop matching up and rematching.
Why would they do that?
Yeah, it's a recipe for disaster.
I just realized that.
Yeah, and there was a fight. And apparently, I didn't see the video yet, but David, you saw the video, so tell me what you saw.
So the video was a big kerfuffle, really.
Yeah,
so
nice word.
It's just about 20, 30 guys just going at it, and you see a helmet just swinging about 2-3 times.
Yeah, two
almost
helmets,
similar.
Actually.
Yep, similar to the Myles Garrett situation with what was that, Mason Rudolph?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, the Giants and Browns back a couple years ago.
Yeah, just 10 times a little bit more on the gruesome side, and he's actually facing a possible suspension. So I'm curious to see. They gave Myles Garrett an indefinite suspension for it happening during the game. I'm curious to see if it's going to be a little bit of a difference because it was a practice.
And the rumor mill has it that there isn't going to be a suspension, which is like, you know what? Maybe we let the actual authorities take care of this. If there's enough, like, I mean, assault with a deadly weapon could just be said about Aaron Donald's hands.
Right.
You give them two football helmets.
That's a good one.
That is is incredible technology. So, honestly, moving on from that, but that's a whole mess. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't get more this league than that.
All right,
Super Bowl matchup in a controlled scrimmage.
We got some time left in the show. We're gonna have to. I was trying to avoid it. We're gonna have to talk about Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers.
Oh my God.
We have to. It's somewhat in market, and we have Dane Dreyfus here hosting with us. So we're gonna do it throughout football season. I got a precursor by saying I'm not a huge Aaron Rodgers guy. I respect him, but I'm not a huge Aaron Rodgers guy, and I definitely don't like the Green Bay practice jerseys or the Packers.
The respect is definitely there. I realize that Aaron Rodgers is one of the best quarterbacks in the league today.
Yep.
I think I realized that a few years back, the year after we went to the playoffs and the Cody Parkey incident happened,
mm-hmm.
That was the same year, actually. The Bears played the Packers in the first game, and he got hurt, came back, and just absolutely destroyed it. I realized then he was one of the best. Now I'm curious to see, now that he doesn't have as many weapons as he had before.
No, Devontae Adams
is gone. Aaron Jones has had kind of a on and off, you know, career so far. I'm curious to see how he's going to do with not as many weapons.
Well, honestly, so the Packers' whole shtick now is their offense is – I just want to say that I also said shtick, which honestly, in hindsight, not a great thing to say on radio. It could sound like something else. But their whole offense is going to be a very run-heavy offense with A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones being a two-headed monster. And Aaron Jones' usage without Davante Adams was insane. He's a huge pass-catching back. So if you're thinking fantasy football-wise, I'm pretty high on him for a PPR league. But also, too, at the wide receiver position, it's very young, and they did pick up a lot of guys. It's going to be a committee this year for sure of Sammy Watkins, Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs. So overall, I'm looking forward to the year. I don't think it's a lock they win the NFC North because I'm high on the Vikings. But also, the last time Aaron Rodgers had a defense like this was when they won it all in 2011. But then again, they've had a solid defense the past couple of years. Hopefully they can get healthy as well with Bakhtiari on the offensive line, Jair at the corner position. But they've kept adding through the draft. Overall, I'm pretty excited for the year, but I've just been – I feel like you can hear it in my voice how disappointed I've been in the playoffs with, like, yeah, the rosters that we've had. We also lost to Darius Smith, which he's kind of long in the tooth for an edge rusher, and I love Rashawn Gary. He went from being, like, this kind of pariah of a pick to being, like, oh, he's a bust. He was also the number one high school recruit in his class, but now he's turned into this absolutely – electric edge rusher where I'm expecting anywhere from 10 to 15 sacks, and I'm really high on this Packers defense, honestly, more than their offense. I think they're going to win a lot of games by their offense scoring under 30 points, but their defense holding teams under 20.
You can never count out Aaron Rodgers, and it pains me to say, but you can never count him out at making a mediocre offense great. I'm not going to say that he made Davante Adams because he didn't, but he made Davante Adams pretty good, and I think he can take these receivers that he has with him and turn them into a little bit of a better product than they might actually have, and we can see if something happens with them. And I think Davante Adams also helped Aaron Rodgers, I should say that as well.
And, you know, let's not forget, with all the young receivers, they still have Randall Cobb, which is probably Aaron Rodgers' favorite teammate. He could use Randall Cobb as an example of how he wants his offense to be ran. I think a couple of days ago he actually had it was controversial at the end, when he called out his receivers, we need to do better. We need to catch balls. We need to make plays. And I think that Randall Cobb is going to benefit well teaching these young guys how to execute correctly.
I think there's a lot more depth on this Packers offense than people are giving credit for, because it's a good team that lost the best receiver in the game. But you look at a team last year like the Detroit Lions, where they went in, their three starting wide receivers were all rookies. It was Quintez Cephas, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and Khalif Raymond. They all ended up being pretty okay with not as good of a quarterback or offense. But this team, too, is going to – you have to catch the ball. So Aaron Rodgers can't catch the ball himself, and it is probably much more stressful with the high expectations that this team has. I really don't expect Christian Watson to be the guy right off the bat. And Randall Cobb, I think, is a good voice, but we also forget that they use draft picks on guys like Amari Rodgers. But I really, really think they're going to be a run-heavy offense. And if the second leading receiver on the team – if it's Aaron Jones, I wouldn't be surprised. If it's Robert Tonyan, I wouldn't be surprised. I think the only one that would actually surprise me would be a guy like Amari Rodgers, where he's more of a specialty guy. I think Romeo Doubs, I think the only thing that could surprise me for him is if he was the leading receiver. Not if he was the second, but if he was the first. That would surprise me. But it's also a good fantasy stash, especially in a dynasty league.
And really quick, I know we touched on the first three NFC North teams. Let's just talk about the Lions really quick. I think they're going to be a sleeper team this year.
I would run through a brick wall for Dan Campbell.
I was about to say, Hard Knocks is really getting people fired up on the Lions.
Like, when you look at their offensive line, they have one of the best centers in the league. You got Jameson Williams, who I know is hurt right now, but when he comes back, he's going to be a good player. Amon-Ra St. Brown on the other side, T.J. Hockenson, DeAndre Swift. Once they get the quarterback situation figured out, they're going to be decent. And obviously, you know, defense needs a little bit of work too, but my Bears are fighting for last place right now.
Everyone keeps disrespecting my boy Jared Goff. I know he doesn't know which direction the sun sets in, but he was still a pretty good quarterback. I don't think he's necessarily the answer, but I wouldn't put it out of the realm of him, like, surprising people. Like, I think Jared Goff and Jimmy Garoppolo are right on the same page. Like, I think if you put Garoppolo on last year's Lions, he has just
Jimmy,
about the...
Jimmy G is overrated, though.
Really?
I think. I mean, I'm not saying that Trey Lance is the answer for the Niners either, but I don't think Garoppolo's... I mean, keep in mind, think about if Brady actually did end up going to the 49ers when he went to the Bucs. That team would have won one, if not two Super Bowls the last 2 years. Because that defense and those other targets have turned that team into a top three NFC team 2 years in a row with Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance under center. That's insane.
And also, too, Garoppolo, whether it be the Patriots or the Niners, like you said, has always had a great roster. And he also went to Eastern Illinois. If you went to Illinois State, he would be a top five QB in the league.
What do you think from the Chiefs this year? We have only a couple minutes left, but where are they this year?
I think for the first time in NFL history, you could see four playoff teams from one division, because that division is the most talented division in the history of football. I'm going to say it. It is the most talented division in the history of football.
Want to elaborate?
I mean, you add Chandler Jones and Khalil Mack. Your worst quarterback is Derek Carr. You have four on track to be future Hall of Famers. Two, you could argue already with Mahomes and Russell Wilson. Mahomes would have to have some gruesome injury to not make it.
So you don't think Russell has solidified a Hall of Fame career yet?
No, I'm saying Russell and Mahomes. Did I say someone else?
Oh, okay. No.
Because Derek Carr is great, and Herbert is on year three.
I'm still going to give it to Derek Carr, though, over Justin Herbert going into this year. I mean, Justin Herbert has great expectations, but Derek Carr has been an underrated quarterback for years.
I love Derek Carr, and I'm not saying that he's a bad QB, but he's the worst QB in the division, no questions asked.
But it's like you said, there's two confirmed Hall of Famers in it, though, basically, in Mahomes and Broncos country, let's ride Wilson.
Oh, yeah, I love Derek Carr, and I love him in fantasy this year, too. But you like I said, you add Chandler Jones, J.C. Jackson for the Los Angeles Chargers, and if I had to rank it, I'm going to rank that division. I like the Broncos to win it, because I think they have the best defense in the most complete roster, with just adding the quarterback as the final piece. And then you also, I'll go Broncos, Chargers, Chiefs, Raiders.
I think that's going to be the clip we're going to pull out in a couple of months and see how close Dame was to that one. I see that, though. That's about all the time we've got for this edition of the Red Zone. Thanks for listening to us. We'll be back next Thursday, and possibly maybe an interesting guest about Wisconsin. We're going to try and figure something out and get some kind of Wisconsin voice on here. So we won't tease anything yet, because we don't even know who it's going to be yet, but we'll try.
Is it Aaron Rodgers?
No, I think we asked Aaron, but he's booked up. He's doing U of I's radio show that day.
Oh man.
But that's all we got here on the Red Zone. For Dane Dreyfus and David Moses, I'm Mikey Frinelli. Thanks for listening. Have a good night.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.